Welcome to episode 14 of the Thinking Habits podcast. This week, we decided to go with, as we discussed last week, we decided to go with exercise and mental health. As it turns out, it's going to be one of many episodes because the conversation we had led to a number of different avenues and areas, and it went quite fractal, and there's lots of different opinions and options you can bring to exercise and mental health. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes. But this week's conversation was with our friend Claire, who is a recently qualified personal trainer, and she talks at length about how exercise has helped with her mental health. And there was a lot of things in that conversation that resonated a lot with me, and may well resonate with you. I mean, it's not the same for everybody. Not everybody can do the same things. Not everybody has the same access to the same facilities or resources for exercise. But there's a lot discussed there about how you can get around that too. And what's even better about the conversation is it just took a natural course and opened up another series of discussion topics, which will become clear in the chat, which are very, very interesting. Not least the fact that underwater hockey is a thing. I never knew that underwater hockey, or octopus as it's called, even existed. It sounds terrifying, and it sounds like something that would probably kill me, as I'm not a super strong swimmer, but it sounds fascinating. Claire explains it a lot more in the episode, so I won't take that away from her. That it's a very, very interesting chat. We also touch on pregnancy, postnatal depression, and issues around that as well. So if that's a sensitive subject for you, but do bear that in mind. That comes in around about the 45-minute hour mark, so bear that in mind if that's something that might upset you. However, it's a very, very positive conversation. It's something that ends on a very good note, and hopefully it will be useful, and hopefully, again, it will generate some more conversation. So enjoy the episode. Enjoy the conversation with Claire. Thank you so much, Claire, for joining us on the podcast. It was really brilliant. I'm looking forward to speaking to her again. So I'll see you at the end. Enjoy. All right. Well, Claire, thanks so much for coming on the Thinking Habits podcast. The reason why we're chatting today is because we're talking about exercise and mental health. And one of the things that you messaged me recently is that you've done a PT training course, and that's something that you felt was definitely beneficial, and exercise in general is very beneficial to your mental health. So I was just wondering, how did you decide to start the PT course?
So basically, I started, I've always been an exercise kind of person.
Yeah.
Ever since being tiny, from like the age of 4 or 5, my dad put a squash racket in my hand, and that was it. It was the head of a squash racket and the handle. My dad basically got one of his, chopped it down, and made it so it fit.
How sweet!
That age.
Have you still got that? That sounds amazing.
And basically put me on a squash court. And so right from a very early age, I always exercised. Mm. And then from about the age of, 17, 18, I kind of stopped exercising. Usual kind of teenage years, discovered cigarettes, boys, everything else, and friends, and you don't really want to be tied up with competitive sport.
Yeah.
So I knocked on the head squash, and I used to play a weird game called Octopus, which is underwater hockey.
Let's go into that for a little while. How do you play that?
So underwater hockey is two teams of, how many is there in the water at the same time? So each team, you are, I think, 6 of us in the water at each time.
Yeah.
Wear a snorkel mask and fins.
Yeah.
And it's played on the bottom of the pool. So you have a lead puck, a lead round puck, a small little wooden bat, which is kind of shaped a little bit like Italy, is the best way to describe the actual
bat.
shoes. Yeah, it's sort of shaped a bit like a boot. Just think on a mat. And yeah, and it's played underwater. So, and you've got two tin goals at each end of the pool. And you dive under, you push it as far as you can go, you pass it. Basically, it's hockey, but underwater.
That absolutely fascinates me, because you find a sport and you just think, right, let's make this sport possible to die. Do you know what I mean? Because the idea of being underwater for that length of time, I mean, Claire, you've seen me snorkeling. I'm not a strong swimmer, but I mean, it's fascinating that people can take a sport, and I think we'll probably get into this later, and take a sport and think, right, well, that's not quite what I like, but I'm good at this, so let's put them together and make it well, work. I love that.
It is. I mean, the thing is, it came about because I went and did, you know, in the your local swimming pools, you do your snorkeling classes. I'm not sure really how much sport is accessible in sports centres these days back in the UK. I figure that it can be quite costly just from friends that are on Facebook.
Yeah, by the sound of it, it kind of is. That some of that sort of stuff is, and I think some of the summer camp things they have for kids are very expensive. But then childcare generally seems to be.
But I mean, I went snorkeling and I joined the snorkeling club, and after the snorkeling club, the underwater hockey team played, and it was like, ooh, so I stuck around. My brother already played as well, so I sort of stuck around, had a look, give that a go. And I mean, the idea is, obviously, people who play are generally extremely fit, because you have to have the ability, you do work up to a point where you can probably do a length and a half underwater. Top players can probably do 2 lengths underwater. And you're doing this not just normal swimming, you're doing this pushing a puck.
Yeah.
Exerting a lot of energy. It builds up your lung capacity. You also kind of learn how to slightly hyperventilate in a safe manner.
Right.
Note to everybody, please don't try and hyperventilate unless you have a lesson to hyperventilate, because, you know, it's not an encouraged thing to do.
Is that what free divers do?
Yeah, I'm not sure if divers do it. I think, free divers.
Free divers.
They really train their bodies to hyperventilate to such a point that they will, well, they've got not, yeah, it's mental.
Yeah.
And when you look into it, if you Google it, not the best, but it, you know, some sources, the way you get your factual sources and you read into it, it's quite an interesting thing. And actually, hyperventilation is one of the reasons why a lot of people, when they get into difficulty in water, lose a lot of energy.
It's
the hyperventilation, because if you fall into cold water, you automatically start to hyperventilate. And it's one of the reasons that, sadly, a lot of people use more of their energy, because their body's kind of exerting and inhaling their air so fast. But that's by the way.
Well, there's funnily enough, just recently, we went to the cinema the other day, and the I think it was the RNLI or something like that, or the Coast Guard put a video on, like an advert on in the trailers, saying, if you get into difficulty in water, don't hyperventilate and lie on your back, which I never thought of. No treading water, just lie on your back. But it's strange that seemed to just, I've never seen an advert for that before. Maybe it's in response to the number of deaths or something, maybe, I don't know.
If you fall into water, basically adrenaline kicks in. The fight or flight. And so your adrenal glands release adrenaline. And that actually sends a message to your brain to kind of go, and your brain is kind of like, your brain clicks into the crap, we've fallen into cold water. We need to survive. Your hormones kick in. And then that's why people then, but if you can get into that mindset of actually stay calm, breathe normally, which is, and ideally, just take slow, long breaths. And as they lie on your back. Because you know, if you lie on your back, you're actually not exerting energy. Because what you need to do is conserve your energy, because If it's cold water especially, you need to conserve energy to retain heat in your body.
Right.
Because that's the thing, if you get cold, then also...
Oh, of course, because all your heat will go to your core, won't it? And you'll lose your
function. And if you look into, like, the Titanic, again, I'm digressing, but if you look into the Titanic and the people, the main causes of death in the water, and everything else, because they did pull a few people out.
Yeah.
A lot of it was to do with the fact that panic, people in such cold water as well, because we've got to remember it's glacial, freezing.
It was absolutely freezing, wasn't it?
Panic would have set in. Many of them probably couldn't swim anyway. Mm. So what they would have splashed around, exerted all their energy.
And then
they had to retain them. Their bodies got cold very quickly, and sadly... That's why. However, let's go back to octopus.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and then when you're not actually on the base of the pool and you haven't maybe got a teammate behind you, the rest of the time you're floating on top watching what's going on, so you've got to dive quickly. Then you have another four or five teammates that are sat on the side of the pool. And then, like in ice hockey, for example, you then just swim back, tag your mate, and in they get. And there are rules that you can't be in the water at the same time.
Right.
So you have to have that ability to tag your mate, get out of the water as they're getting in, and so you've got to be able to go over. So there's other strength as well, such as the upper body strength, being able to get out of a swimming pool.
To hold yourself out quick.
Yeah. So I played underwater hockey. I played up to like county level and national. So it's still a very unknown sport.
Well, I'd never heard of it until 10 minutes ago.
So. I mean, they play it all over the world, and it is. They have world championships and everything. And in the UK, they've actually now got quite a big league. Mm. And a lot of universities play it.
Right.
So it's getting a lot more popular. It's just, again, it's one of those sports that actually make, and they have applied to, like, the Olympics, and you know, you can have demo sports, and they have applied to the Olympics several, I think they apply every single year to request that it becomes a demo sport, but there are other sports that the Olympic Committee see more fitting. Maybe one will get there, because it'd be quite nice to, because when I say to people, I played underwater hockey, I get the same reaction that you gave me, and it's like, what?
But then it sounds really fun.
Oh, it is, and it's it's fun. And like I say, the fitness levels are immense of these athletes, because you're underwater. And when you play competitions, a lot of competitions we played at Ponds Forge in Sheffield and Crystal Palace.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So, and their pools, basically, you would play in their 3 meter depth pools. Mm. So normally, when you play, you'll go to each of the swimming pools, and as you know, swimming pools kind of have a gradient. So at one side, you're in shallower water, and the other side, you're at the deep end. Mm. And obviously, the shallower the water, the easier it is, because you don't also have the pressure of the water.
Yeah.
Whereas when you go and play matches at Sheffield or Crystal Palace or abroad, they have pools that are 25 metres wide, specifically made for certain sports.
Right.
And they have no gradients. They're 3 meters deep, which also is deeper than a standard swimming pool.
Yeah.
Because a standard swimming pool is about a meter and about 2 meters, I think. Yeah. 2 meters five.
Right.
At a push. So when you're training, you never really train in pools that are as deep as real competitions. Right. And if you're going 3 meters down, the pressure of the water on top of you, you exert too much energy. And expel too much air, that coming back to the top, you also have to have enough air to get you back to the surface to get 3 meters. Mm. And I don't know if anybody else has done it, but you know when you've gone swimming and you've dived underwater and then you've felt that feeling that you're actually not going to be able to get back to the top.
Yeah, you know when you go and get the rubber brick off the bottom, I used to do that one,
And when at school, I mean, I don't even know if they still do that anymore, because I don't think they necessarily focus on swimming safety.
I'm not sure, to be honest. A lot of schools now From friends with kids, a lot of schools now have their own swimming pools, but the school I went to didn't. So I went, I did my swimming lessons and stuff outside of that. And they always, obviously, when it's a private lesson or whatever, I think they have to have a module of that. So,
talking to friends back in the UK, because obviously I live in France, talking to friends back in the UK about curriculum of schools, because it's confusing, because obviously I have Noah, he's 12. He's going into his second year of college, which is the equivalent of the second year of high school. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting talking about how the curriculums work and everything else. And in France, they don't really focus on sport. Sport is something that's done externally. They do, from high school age, they do have a couple of PE lessons a week. Mm. But it's not kind of enforced, if you know what I mean. The kids are allowed. France is very like non-secular and everybody can do what they want sort of thing. You know, we don't have school uniforms and that kind of thing, that, you know. I mean, even to the point where, for example, they won't force your kid to go to a lesson if they don't want to go to a lesson. They'll just stick them on instead. You know, they've got that kind of, you know, an example is Noah doesn't like music lessons and actually went to the classroom with his friend for the lesson. They looked through the door, the teacher saw them, they decided they didn't want to do it that day and walked off and went and sat in the common room.
Nice. And I wish I could have done that.
The teacher didn't go and drag them back, but what the teacher did do was then go marked it down and said, and I saw them, we get a letter home as parents, and then they get put on detention. They don't school on a Wednesday afternoon here, and what they do is if you're on detention, you sit that Wednesday afternoon, so you 3 hours, they sit in a room for 3 hours. A bit breakfast clubbish.
Oh, yeah. It does feel a bit like that. Yeah, it does feel like that.
It's a bit breakfast clubbish.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. So, yeah, when it comes to sport here, it's not. And also swimming, they don't really do swimming and such. So it's interesting to talk to parents back in the UK about sport in schools. Mm. And it does feel like it's not really classed as an important subject.
See, that's so interesting, isn't it? Because there's so much of an emphasis over here where sport, it's primarily for what we're talking about. It's supposed to be an integral part. And like you're talking about the underwater hockey thing, going into exercise, I find exercise for me, if I get it right, if I find the right exercise, I find it incredibly fun. And that's what keeps me going. It's when it becomes a chore, like, sometimes going to the gym, in inverted commas, I find just, oh God, it's tedious because you've only got yourself to really, I feel like that anyway. You know, it doesn't feel fun in inverted commas. Do you know what I mean?
See, this is the thing with sporting schools as well. A lot of people I think the thing is that people kind of hark back to this preconceived idea of sports, schools, changing rooms and, you know, have you ever seen the movie Cares?
Yeah.
You'd think the PE teacher in Cares.
Yeah.
You know, and I think sometimes people still have these. I mean, Cares was filmed in the 60s.
Yeah.
But, you know, but and you look at that, or you know, you look at they still have this preconceived idea that PE teachers are like that PE teacher.
Yeah. Or, Grange Hill. My thing is I go to Grange Hill.
Yeah, or Grange Hill, or TV series Teachers.
Yes.
The PE teacher, you know, he'd stand at the bike shed smoking a fag and sort of thing and yelling and then,
yeah,
you know, and I think people also have the preconceived idea that that's what PE teachers are like. Mm. So kids automatically go, I don't want to do PE. Mm. And the education system as a whole don't see an importance of PE. Mm. Where I look at PE in school is, maybe kids who haven't got access to sport facilities at school, PE, and because you do such different varied sports, like you were saying, there are certain sports you find when you like, you will do it. And I think school is the best place to find a sport because they will do netball, hockey, football, rugby, athletics. And then you try so many different ones, you're bound to find one that you kind of go,
Yeah, I had my memory of gym at school or PE at school. I wasn't very good at it because I had real problems with my ankle as a teenager, and And so I missed a lot of PE. So everybody kind of got a lot fitter than I did. So every time I played a sport, I was a lot further sort of behind in my own fitness, but also in the skill in the game. So I was a bit, at that point I kind of went, oh, do you know what? Sack it. I just won't bother. Yep. And then what that's done is that put a kind of break on that. When I did want to start getting fit, it just took me so much longer. That's one thing I really regret, is not pushing myself as a kid more to get that kind of level of fit.
Also, PE teachers as well, just from talking to teachers, they're restricted. Hmm. Because I don't know fully, I mean, I could confirm this, but I think they only get, I think it's only 2 1-hour lessons a week.
That sounds about right.
Or it may actually only be 1 1-hour lesson. I know it's, when I was at school, there was a lot. Mm. I think we did 3 lessons of PE a week, minimum. And then there was the lunchtime, rounders club and everything else that you could get involved with. But I think they're so limited now on what they can do. Because, you know, if you think you've got a class of 30 and you've got an hour to teach them sport, and you've got to get them all into their PE kit for lesson, then they have to get changed out of their PE kit and make it to their next lesson. You basically probably got 35 minutes, 40 minutes max.
Yeah, it's not enough, is it?
To inspire them. And this is like what we're talking about, where they're looking, I obviously do a lot of reading into sport. It's a world round. It's not just a UK thing or a France thing. This is worldwide. That, you know, children now are suffering mental health. Or I think we're actually accepting that children are now suffering from mental health. Mm. Whereas I think many years ago, if a child was acting sad, if a child was depressed maybe or anxious, you just put it down to they're just growing, or they're just sad. And to be like, sort yourself, you know, and we just dismiss it. And I think now we're more accepting that actually anxiety, depression, mental health can start at a very, you know, you can get children as young as 2, 3, from their early development. There's, it is, you know, as a lot of research has shown, it's not necessarily factors in life that affect your mental health. Well, they do, but do not cause mental health. I think there can be a chemical imbalance. Chemical imbalances can start right from very early on.
Yeah.
And sport is one of those things that you, if you get, that can help.
Yeah.
Focus the mind. And I think a lot of children, you know, would benefit massively, but they're not being given the advantage, they're not being given the opportunity. Mm. You know, I remember right from primary school years, you know, your vest and knickers.
And you gym slips and that,
and all your parents had to supply was those black plimsolls.
Yeah,
and you had to have your vest and pants on that day. Obviously, pants also vest. And into the school hall, and you did activity. You had those bean bags. I used to love those bean bags. And there was that bags, smell. Yeah. And all school halls had, you know, which probably it's to do with health and safety maybe now, but you know, the climbing ropes and everything that were kind of fastened to the wall.
And those little benches with the hooks
on and everything like that. You did, you know, you ran around.
Yeah.
And in this playground, you ran around. Mm. And I'm not saying, you know, and I think children benefit from that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, as I said, with the curriculum as it is, and there's so much emphasis put on academic studies.
Yeah.
And the children must perform to a certain level in maths, English, science.
Mm.
But, you know, what they should do is in stats maybe have something that is related to physical education.
Mm.
That your child must reach a competent standard of X, Y, and Z, must be able to run 100 metres in, but some form of acknowledging that it is quite vital to life skills.
Yeah.
As is maths and English and maths, you know, English, science, general knowledge is important, but also so is the ability to, and also cook healthy meals, but that's another...
No, but that's, that's all part of it though, because when they start doing lessons like, well, I remember when, just at the point where I was in the fifth year at school, before when there was still a fifth year, before it was like 11th grade or whatever they call it now, we had these PSE lessons, personal and social education, and they were just starting to acknowledge that people needed some kind of life skills. But I think the sport thing links into that really, really well, because at the very least, most sports encourage teamwork in a way that participation and kind of camaraderie and an intrinsic knowledge of your surroundings and your peers in a way that a science lesson doesn't necessarily give you.
Exactly. Team sports. You've just hit the nail on the head. Team sports. The ability to interact with people. Mm. The camaraderie. This, you know, as silly as it sounds, someone, you know, like, for example, cricket, where they're sledging. Mm. You know, yes, I mean, that can become quite vicious. Mm. And I'm surprised that some cricketers haven't just turned around and whacked somebody behind them. Because it can, and it can be quite personal, but you're broadly pledging. Mm. You know, teaches you the ability to kind of be able to take a joke. Mm. You know, and learn how to react to something like that. You know, also bonding together, working as a team.
Yes. Yeah.
Learning those skills that actually you're very good at this. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, your rugby teams and everything else, people have their own positions because they are better at the certain positions to the other people. Their bodies maybe are built different as well.
Yeah.
But that learning how to interact with people, mm-hmm. working with the team, because when you go into the big wide world, it's all right if you're very good at, if you've got great grades at academic studies, but you have to have people skills, because when you go into the world of work, you're not just with a group of people your age. You are going to be entering a workforce of different, a generation, two generations above you. Exactly. So you have to know how to be able to interact with people.
Yeah.
And I think sport can do that.
Mm.
Also can give, you know, a positivity. It gives you confidence.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to be very good at a sport, to be honest. No. It's just the fact that if you are taught, give it a go. And as long as you're doing your best, you know, and it can boost your confidence.
Well, I can attest to that, because I started doing, about a year ago, I started doing mixed martial arts a couple of times a week. And I've had a couple of breaks because I had appendicitis, and then I managed to get a hernia. But an extended period of time, going every week, Claire, I cannot underestimate how much I suck at this sport. I am so bad. And the sport is brilliant. There could be anything from about 5 to 20 people in the class at any one time. And there is a very distinct group of people. There's 4 or 5 people who fight regularly, competitively, and they are superb. And to watch them, you just think, oh my God. And I'm there swinging my gloves around or whatever. And, you know, when I get it right, it's such an amazing sense of achievement. I know, and I'm comfortable I have come to terms with the fact that I will never achieve what they can achieve, because one, I'm literally twice their age. And I ache putting my gloves on, whereas they're bouncing off the walls. You know, they're training 3 times a day. I train twice a week. But the sense of camaraderie I get when I step on that mat, and the best fighter in the entire gym will come over and spend time with me, just getting one thing right. That's enough for me. And I work, and I know that I work until I honestly thought I was going to puke the other week. But, but I would never do that on my own. I'd never get that far. I'd always stop a lot earlier
You do. Your body and your brain says, oh, but when you have somebody else there, you know, the camaraderie, like you say, I mean, I do it with snowboarding, for example.
Yeah.
There are certain things that I've learned, there are certain tricks that I've learned to do that I would have never pushed myself personally to try. Mm. It's only because I've gone out with a group of guys and girls and it's been like, try that.
Mm.
The first time, I failed. The second time, I've really sucked at it. The third time, and it's hurt or whatever. But the group, the pack, the kind of mentality of everybody together, that even just trying it,
yeah.
You know, and like you say, if you were just there by yourself, you would just give up. But it's surprising how much, what a sense of achievement you get, even from failing, when you're with people who boost your confidence. They make you feel good. So you get the sense of achievement that even if you haven't achieved what you want to do, it's still a sense of achievement because these people are like, yes, well done, for just for trying. Yeah. So you are kind of, all of a sudden, you stand up taller. You're like, yes, you know, go back. It's like, oh, yeah. Swagger. And also, you know, in your head, you're like, you know what, if I was by myself, I would have done that. So then you also get that sense of achievement from yourself.
Yeah. And that's where the mental health thing comes in again. When I know when I've had the worst day at work, and I just think, oh God, you know, I've got to commute over back to Manchester. I've got to go to the gym. It's an hour. It's going to hurt. But then I have to force myself, and I say, right, get there and put your foot on the mat, and then you'll remember why you're there. Because when I've finished, the endorphins and the adrenaline and the absolute fatigue, it keeps me going for the rest of the day and into the day after. It really, you know, and that's for me as somebody who suffers with the kind of cyclic depression cycle. I've had to become very aware of knowing that I could very easily not do something because I'm getting into a dip, but I know that that's when I should be doing more because it's not. Because otherwise, I'll just end up in that rut again. So.
See, this is where I think with my depression and anxiety, I don't, because I've always been very active, because I've always done sport, I've always had those endorphins from a very early age. Mm. So I do think that maybe as a teenager, maybe I did suffer with, like say, cyclic depression, up, you know, and up and down. But I think also as a teenage girl, and especially back in the 80s, early 90s, it was that, you know, it's just your hormones and puberty, blah, blah. But I exercised, and I exercised a lot, which meant that I always had these happy endorphins running through me. And it wasn't until maybe more so into my mid-20s when, well, like I say, I stopped sort of exercising regularly about 17, 18, usual teen. Woo!
Yeah.
That's what life's about, you know, and the partying and the, you know, burning the candle at both ends kind of thing. And I think sometimes you put maybe that down, and maybe sometimes as well you could put your anxiety or certain mental health symptoms down to fatigue and also down to your lifestyle. But also I think I was also a lot more resilient back then, and I was like, well, I'll just drink it away, or, you know, whatever, because that's, you know, Thursday nights came and it was like, that's the start of the weekend.
Yeah.
And the weekend finished until Sunday. And on a Monday morning, you felt like crap, but you were young enough to bounce back, and you just put it down to, that was a big weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Thursday came along again and you were back on that cycle.
Yeah.
And then you mature, and then I got back into sport again. So I got massively massively into snowboarding.
Right.
So in the winters I was massively snowboarding and doing ski seasons. Again drinking, because that's what comes as being a season. Yeah, you've been to Merivale, you've seen the lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so I kind of went through a phase of maybe three, four years of not really doing much in the way of exercise whatsoever. But just kind of thinking, well, it's just a lifestyle. And also that life was a bit simpler then.
Yeah.
And I think your mental health is affected as well by external factors such as stress.
Yeah.
And life. I look back and it was carefree. You know, all I had to worry about was making sure I paid the rent and making sure I had money to last me the weekend. And maybe buy a bit of food.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, obviously, and then you kind of develop, your life moves on because you do grow up in a fashion. Again, you've been to Merivale, you know that maybe Merivale people are not.
Well, we grow older, we don't necessarily grow up, do we?
Don't necessarily grow up. But, yeah, so I kind of, had a maybe 3-4 years without exercise. Then I got back into exercise again. And so exercise, I think, generally did control any mental health issues that I had, but didn't even realize I had.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, you know, it was that up and down, like you say, but never massive dips, never massive highs. I basically am this wave, you know, this sort of little current wave. And then I don't think it was until I necessarily fell pregnant that actually my mental health, well, actually it was after I had Noah. And I think, again, I do actually think that came then down to hormones, pregnancy hormones, and the chemical imbalance of what actually pregnancy can produce, you know. Because you do get people that are women who go into postnatal psychosis.
Yeah.
I mean, yourself, you're a mental health nurse, you will have seen it. These women will have never suffered depression or anxiety or stress before in their lives. But the imbalance of the hormone imbalance that pregnancy can cause, chemical imbalance, you know, these women go from never experiencing mental health issues to complete psychosis.
Yeah, it can be. I have seen that a couple of times, and it can be, it's terrifying to see how quickly that can happen, and the amount of work that it takes to get yourself back out of that as well.
You know, and so when, after I had Noah, after 6 months of feeling the baby blues, I finally decided, actually, do you know what? It's time to get this under control. You're going back to work. You can't be feeling like this. I think one of the problems, which I'm digressing into something completely different, but one of the problems with, like, when you have a baby is your health visitor gives you a questionnaire. And when you first have a baby, and especially your first, you worry about what answers you're going to put. Because one thing that goes through your mind is, if I put the wrong answer, are they going to think I'm a bad parent? Are they going to take my baby away from me?
Yeah. And I suppose that puts even more pressure on you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it's like now, but 12 years ago, it was 10 questions. And it was a yes and no. Do you feel teary watching Simple Things on TV? Well, actually, yes, I did. Because I felt teary all the time, but it was like, I'm going to click no, I don't want them to know that I want to cry all the time. And it was very simplistic questions like that, but you glance over them and you just think, do you know what? If I answer the wrong questions, are they going to go, bad mum?
Yeah.
You know, or I go there and go, bad mum, highlight you, and you're going to have social services knocking at your door, and then they're going to say, we want to keep an eye on you. You know, because also you don't want that kind of, you know. But sorry, I digress into another issue.
Not really, because I suppose if you're worried about that, but then you've also if you've also got a predisposition to be paranoid anyway, and your hormones are up in the air, and then you get this questionnaire which almost validates the kind of burgeoning paranoia that you would have even if you didn't have a baby. That's a cauldron, isn't it? That's a horrible place to be.
It is, and I mean, this is 12 years ago, and I still remember looking at this questionnaire and just thinking, what are the right answers? And there was no right and wrong answer. Really, there's no right and wrong answer, because if you were honest about it, they would have said, right, just go and speak to the doctor. But in your head, and especially I think more so when it's your first and you have no idea, you are going, which is the right, which is the wrong answer. If I could tick that, are they going to say, oh, you're not very well, or, you know, and like you say, it's a pot that just gets stirred and stirred and stirred. And yes, when your hormones are up in the air and you feel stressed, you are fatigued because you have a lack of sleep, got a newborn, you're stressed because you don't know what the hell you're doing, and you're like, oh my God. Baby's crying, and you're like, I don't know why you're crying. I've fed you, I've changed you. What is wrong? And you just talk to me. And they come. Yes, you know, the baby blues is actually a real thing, you know, because your baby blues and then turn slightly maybe more into depression rather than just the baby blues. You know, everything it is a pot just of an explosion waiting to happen, really. But like I said, and especially as new mums, so you don't have really the opportunity to exercise as such, because to be honest with you, you feel pretty shit.
Mm.
And all your energy, you just need to look after a child.
You know, you're focusing on this tiny thing, helpless thing, aren't you?
Yeah. However, saying that, I was quite lucky because in Bournemouth at the time, because Noah was born in Dorset, they had, and they still do now, and I'm massively advocate, really, really say to any new mums or any pregnant women, if you have one of these classes in the U, join it. Mm. It's called Mummy Fit.
Mm.
And they do prenatal, so when you're heavily pregnant, because you do get to a point when you're pregnant, you're like, I can't exercise anymore. Mm. And if you are, but maybe if you are, do have any mental health, to go there prenatal is really good, because you mix with other mums who are pregnant, so you can all have a good bitch about how shit you feel. And you're exercising.
Yeah.
And gentle exercises, which then release the endorphins and release the hormones that make you feel that little bit better about yourself. Because there is prenatal depression as well, which I think gets kind of overlooked because of postnatal depression. But I think sometimes people have to have a look and go, you know, people can be quite, because again, the hormones are kicking in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's an absolute, like you say, it's an absolute soup, isn't it?
It is. And then, but once you've had your baby, Mummy Fit do exercise classes and take your baby with you. So you don't have to worry about finding childcare. Mm. Now, Bournemouth had this Mummy Fit when I had Noah. Mm. And you know what? It was one of the things that out of the whole week, because you don't, you know, you're at home with this baby and generally you are there by yourself, apart from the odd mummy and baby class.
Mm.
It was one of the things that I really looked forward to, because you took your child with you. So your baby came along, they give you exercises that are suited to post-pregnancy bodies.
Right.
But they don't, they're stretchers, they're exercises that, because they know that actually your body's completely changed.
Mm.
You know, you've got all the, you know, everything's stretched and is healing. Yeah. Mm. Like I said, you take your baby with you, so you know there's toddlers running around. It's not stressful because you're just there and you've got this opportunity. You're also then with other women who you can talk to,
and everyone's in the same boat as well, aren't they?
The same boat, because I think one of the things with post-pregnancy is loneliness, because you do spend a lot of time by yourself. Yes, you have another human with you, but that human actually can't really interact with you. You know, you don't have that adult conversation. And especially, I think, in modern society where families don't necessarily live near each other, you can't knock on somebody's door next door, you know, and pop in like you could do in, for example, call the midwife.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole street is full of women, just can't, you know, and a woman has a baby at home, and then all of a sudden everybody's there and they're there to help. And, you know, modern society doesn't really have that anymore.
No, certainly not as much. No.
Not much. And so, therefore, these things like Mummy Fit are a really good opportunity to get out there. One, meet other mums. You don't have to worry about childcare. And two, because you're exercising. And again, you do walk out there really kind of like, oh, I feel like I've done something. And you feel happy. And then generally you go on, I mean, if you're doing it for fat loss, then I would probably say it's not that. You shouldn't be necessarily going for specific fat loss.
Yeah, it's a lot gentler rather than
It is to kind of get your body back into shape. It is to kind of release those endorphins. And then afterwards, you generally go for coffee and cake.
I suppose that's just as important, because that then carries on the camaraderie, which is, I think, one of the most important things there is the loneliness aspect, which I never really thought about. I mean, we don't have kids, but I never really thought about the fact that you must feel very isolated.
There are days where literally, as I say, you can feel very isolated because especially maybe if your baby's born in winter, and the weather's not that great. And so the idea of just going out for a walk, if it's raining or anything, you don't really want to be going out for a walk. as you are literally stuck in your own four walls, and you have the TV for company, maybe. And like, yes, loneliness can set in, but anything that gets people out is a good thing. And like I say, Mummy Fit, it's called Mummy Fit UK, is an amazing exercise class group. Nice. Because as I say, it focuses on the post-pregnancy body, focuses on pre-pregnancy body, but also, as you say, there's, you meet a group of like-minded people. And everybody's also, as well, I think when it comes to post-pregnancy, you've also got the, am I doing this right? And you're constantly questioning your own ability to be a parent. And when you go to these groups where there are other mums there, you can, generally, the babies aren't all the same age. And you will see them all, and I think they take them up to the age of one. So when your child gets to one, that's, I think, oh, that was the one I went to. Once the child got to one, that was it. However, generally, by the time they get to one, most women are either back to work or they're in childcare. But you can see the different development stages, and you can say to somebody, oh my God, my baby's doing this. You know, and you're kind of really worked up about it. And there'll be a mum there whose child will be at that age or slightly older and be able to turn and say, that's normal. Fine. You know, that kind of thing. But, you know, sport, exercise, postpartum. Those endorphins and everything else. For me, that was probably the one thing that I really and truly looked forward to. Because, one, it was sport and I loved sport. And two, it got me out. And three, I mean, I've made friends that I'm still friends with now.
You know, my sister says that. My sister's got, I've got a niece and a nephew, 8 and 5, I think they are. They might, I think they might be older than that, God. But she's got friends from NCT and those kind of things, who she's still friends with because of that bonding experience of is this right? Am I doing this right? Is this the right thing to do? That's brilliant.
It does help. You know, it really does help, because I think also the problem, one of the issues is that your health visitors and health professionals have guidelines to follow. So if you have a question, you ask the health professional, they have to follow certain guidelines. They have to advise you in a certain way. And I completely understand that, because if they advise, well, actually, personally, I do this, and then it goes horribly tits up. They are liable. So you can ask your health professional to a certain point, but those groups where these women can come together, that you can ask the questions that your health visitor will give you the guidelines answer to, but the other mums will go, look, your health visitor said this. However, this is what worked for me. You know, and so also that helps as well.
And that's also something that you see very much in mental health nursing, from my point of view as well, because we you know, we have guidelines when we're talking to patients and clients about what you should be doing, about, you know, like exercise, for example. We're talking about exercise and mental health now. You know, the guidelines from the Royal College of Psychiatrists says you need to do 30 minutes of strenuous exercise, well, active exercise a day, for it to have any benefit. It should be you know, it should be a strategic goal. It should be something that's shared. That's fine. That's you know, that's fine to put that online. And some people will go for that. But I don't necessarily want to do something that's shared. I mean, we've talked about team sports. I also like running. You know, that I like, but I like doing that on my own. Do you know what I mean? So having the party line that you have to toe, because government guidelines say these are the best things. It's normally just a line of best fit, though. And everybody's different. Everybody's different.
Different, because, you know, past the stage of Noah, we then moved to Maribor full time. When Noah was, well, we moved out when Noah was, what, 8 months old? And then permanently, when Noah was 18 months coming up to 2 years, we made the decision permanent, which took us even further away from families.
Yeah.
You know, into a new community.
Yeah.
Didn't actually know. And then started up a business and everything else, and life kind of becomes, and I think, you know, life then, you have things to focus on. Mm. And so for me, mental health wise, because I had so much to focus on, I don't really think I kind of had time to actually think, am I a little bit stressed or anxious? Because I just got on with it. And still, I had a toddler.
Yeah.
Literally, you don't. And I'm pretty sure that wave of depression was always there, just in the foreground. Mm. I had a lot of other things to focus on, and like I did get back into exercise. Mm. But then fast forward, you know, 10 years, and suddenly things change, life changes, and suddenly those waves, you know, became dips.
Yeah.
And stress and anxiety really kicked in, like I've never felt it before. Mm. And this is where now, why I'm now where I am. So basically, yeah, fast forward, no, not 10 years, maybe 8 years.
Yeah.
So it gets to like 8 to 10. And like I say, life carries on.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not as intense as it was. So like I say, those depression waves became dips, and the anxiety became something I've never felt before. Mm. And to be honest with you, I can't even pinpoint why, where, when. It just did.
Just did, yeah.
And, you know, you can put it off and you can think, oh, it'll get better tomorrow. I'll be better tomorrow. And as I think many people with mental health do, you just go, do you know what, I'll feel better tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, I've done that.
Tomorrow comes and you don't actually feel better.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I ended up going to the doctors, getting just mild antidepressants and anxiety tablets. And to be honest with you, they worked.
Yeah.
They worked a treat. But I wanted also something that would complement these. Mm. And I was still snowboarding, but in the summer months when there's no snow, there was nothing.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, you need to find a sport that you enjoy.
Yeah.
Now, I always remembered loving squash, but there's no squash court here. Mm. I'm not a runner. I detest running with a passion. I find the whole idea. And don't get me wrong, I have downloaded Couch to 5K so many times on my phone. And I've got... week one, run one, and after week one, run one, I've gone, I'm deleting the app.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, oh, I'll try that app again. No. Short burst running is my, you know, squash court, short burst running, always my thing. And then I've never been one for the gym. Always said, no, don't like the gym. However, something inside me slightly changed. And it was that actually I need to do something.
Yeah.
And I need a sport. And, you know, I live in a place where there's walking. You know, I can walk up a mountain. But again, for me, exercise is about, you know, kind of pushing myself a little bit. I like to feel like the heart rate. I like to, you know, feel like I've actually physically done something. And to me, walking up a mountain doesn't actually generate those endorphins for me personally. However, for other people it does.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it works for them. But I started at the gym. You know, like you were saying, there were days when you kind of think, I just can't be bothered. And it's a mental barrier that you have to overcome just to get your foot through the door of going to the gym. But like you said, once you get your foot through that door, or maybe you've changed into your gear, you're like, right, okay, well, I'm here. Might as well do it.
And you often find, I don't know about you, but you often find on the days where it's the hardest for you to get going and get done, you often have your best days. I don't know why that is, but I often find that I have my best days when I've really had to force myself to do it.
So do I, because you, I don't know, I have no idea why, but you get in there, you push yourself, and if you can get over the first 10 minutes of a warm-up, once you've got that first 10 minutes out of the way, suddenly you're like, well, actually.
Yeah, let's crack on, yeah.
Let's just crack on. Mm. And before you know it, you've been there an hour and a half, even possibly 2 hours, and you're like, my God, where did... And the days that you're pumped up and you're like, right, I'm off to the gym, here we go. You get in there and you go, actually. So I went into the gym and I started with cardio and I was doing like cross trainer. And I'd stand on the cross trainer for 45 minutes, swatting away at the cross trainer. And then I'd walk out and I had this realization that when I was going to the gym, I was walking out there feeling a lot happier than I did generally. And I'd always kind of known the science and everything else behind exercise and sport, and the theories as well, because there are a lot of theories out there. You know, so I kind of already had that knowledge, but it was putting myself out there to exercise, like I used to do as a teenager and as a kid. And gradually over time I got fitter and I learned that actually this is my thing. I really enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I think also what it did was remind me that actually I've always enjoyed sport. Back to that 4 or 5 year old girl that was given a squash racket chopped down by her dad.
Yeah.
And being thrown a ball and hit it. You know, I've always enjoyed the camaraderie because I played team squash, junior, adult level. So even though it's a solo sport, you're still with teams.
You're with your peers, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got that camaraderie as well. And then team sports and the love of sport when I was at school and everything else. And it was like, do you know what? This is what I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And gradually over time, over the last four years, I was like, I don't take the tablets anymore. Just purely because I'm now in a situation, I'm now in that place where it works for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, if it happens where I have another massive attack, you know, I am not averse to going back to the doctor and saying, look, I am doing my best, I control my mental health via exercise. However, currently
still having a bit of a problem. Yeah,
having a problem, that control isn't working at the moment. So I think temporary, however long it takes. So I got, you know, and then I went from doing cardio into also strength training. So now I do a lot of strength training. Yes, the gym is a very solo sport kind of.
Yeah.
Because, well, it just is. You know, if you're lifting weights, you know, you're building your strength, a bit of cardio. And I plug my music in because I do like to take myself away.
I do that.
I find if you take yourself away, you can take yourself into your own space without having any interference from what is going on around you. Because I find sometimes the interference from what's going around can be a distraction.
Yeah.
And then when you get distracted, I can lose my flow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and so I do know that it's quite a solitary sport. But it's what works for me.
It's what works, yeah.
Because there are people that go to the gym that don't use their own music because they don't, they like the whole environment. They like feeling the whole environment, that they listen to the music there and everything. And that works for them.
I love putting my headphones in when I go running because it distracts me, because if I don't have my headphones in, I've noticed I concentrate too much on my breathing, and then if I'm not if I'm concentrating too much on my breathing, I'm invariably not doing it right. So then I get so wound up with that I'm not breathing properly, which means that I don't run as well and I get exhausted quicker. Whereas if I've got something to listen to, it almost distracts me. And then the steps and the breathing and the motion and the action becomes subconscious. And sooner or later, you've done your 5K and you don't necessarily realise you've run as far as you.
Yeah, this is it with me, with music in the gym. I have playlists. And depending on my mood, depends on my playlist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this week has been a massive Prodigy week.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like iTunes do, you know, when you're kind of looking, you've got your Apple Music or whatever, and you look for an artist, and then they have... They have playlists, but they also have, they've created these essential lists, playlists. Oh. So it's kind of like these artists, all their best have been compiled by.
Oh, yeah. Spotify do that, yeah.
And I love it because it saves me going through different albums, going, well, I like that one, I like that one, I like that one. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some album tracks that I might like that I wish they put into these essentials, but, you know.
Yeah, you can edit them, can't you? Yeah.
But yeah, so this week's been a massive Prodigy week. Completely. Because I've just felt this need to really be like, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Some days could be, you know, like last week, there was a mixture. There was a bit of Sabian, a bit of Fleetwood Mac going on and all the rest. But I find with music and sport and exercise and with the mental health, all three assist me. Musically, depending on what mood I'm in, can assist.
Definitely. Yeah.
It can also motivate you. So on those days when you can't be bothered, but you know, as soon as you get in there, you'll be fine. Put something that's motivational or, you know, something that really fires you up. Also helps with that feeling of, oh, I can't be bothered, because suddenly, I mean, it's like going to a nightclub, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to a club and it's full on dance music, no one stood there swaying from side to side.
No.
You know, the body kind of goes with the beat of the music. And it's the same when going to exercise for me. If the mood is, oh, can't really be bothered, put something that's got a, like, bang, bang, bang to it.
Yeah.
And I kind of go, oh, right. And you feel energized. And then on the days when, because there are times when you can go and exercise and you actually feel really hyped up and you know actually that you do need to calm down a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise your pace is too hot. You go too far too soon, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you fatigue yourself. So you do need something to calm you down. And I think, you know, sports where maybe, you know, I mean, like something if you're competing in something, you know. I know a lot of sportsmen do put on music that gets them worked up, but it's probably not hardcore drum and bass because they don't want to go on pitch at massively top level of adrenaline, because they do need some form of adrenaline to kind of...
They need to temper it though, don't they? Yeah.
But they temper it. And, I mean, they wouldn't be necessarily listening to maybe Beethoven's Fifth or something like that. Because that might be, you know... counterintuitive to what they need to do, but
possibly,
you know, it's but yeah, so for me, exercise is a way to control and manage mental health. And I think it gets sidelined a little bit when people that do have mental health issues, and this is where I think the government maybe should kind of look at this. I know they have their guidelines, like you say, where it's like, right, you need to do X amount of exercise per week, and it's a certain standard, it needs to be so strenuous or something. But for many people who may have mental health issues, one of the issues that doesn't help them is that they may not have a lot of money.
No. May not have a lot of money, they may not have a lot of access to facilities.
Access to sporting facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's all right saying to somebody, well, you should try this because it will be, it is beneficial.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the facilities or the access or, you know, the disposable income.
Yeah.
It can be difficult. It's not, unfortunately, it's not cheap to exercise.
It's not. I mean, there are a couple of, I've seen a few, well, I know of a couple of clients that I've worked with who've had exercise on prescription, mm-hmm. but that is so limited. And with the way that the GPs are funded nowadays, those access to those things is quite reduced and limited, unfortunately. And I think,
but you see, this is where I think they need to have to maybe reassess this and say, you know what, instead of just prescribing medication,
yeah,
maybe we should have the ability to prescribe exercise more to people. I mean, I know there are people that says, oh, exercise can be free, get outside and go for a run.
Yeah.
But if you're not that kind of person that enjoys sport as a solo
task,
such as running, because the idea for me of going out for a run makes me just, you know, doesn't entertain me. And
I'll be honest, I love running, but while we're talking, I'm looking out the window and it is absolutely hammering it down. And that's what's going through my head. It's now like, oh God, because I'm supposed to be going for a run after this. I'm going to wait for it to break, I think.
Exactly. This is it. Because when you are, when you're doing something off your own back, so to speak, it is your self-motivation. Yeah. It's your self to motivate you. And I think if you are suffering with mental health and you don't have that self-motivation, because with mental health, what it does do is it also chips away at your self-confidence. It does
chip away.
And to the point where you just think, do you know what, I'm not worth it.
No. I've definitely been there. And I think now that I've managed to grasp back onto the, you know, I've been relatively fine for a number of years now. But now that I've been able to sort of really recognize how much benefit I get from exercise, I'm very keen not to let go of that and slip back down into that. And I think the first discussion we had really was about the fact that you said that doing this PT course, which we haven't actually talked about yet.
I'll be really quick.
because that's almost like the culmination of it's wonderful. It's been a wonderful, wonderful chat, because what I get from that is that the PT course seems to be like the culmination of you kind of rediscovering your love of exercise and how that's helped your mental health.
Well, this is it. And what it's doing, it's made me feel that actually, do you know what? I love exercise. Mm. I love sport. And I know what it's done for me personally.
Yeah.
Physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And by becoming a personal trainer, this means that I can then impart this this excitement, this kind of interest and knowledge onto other people who are maybe struggling.
Yeah.
You know, not even just with mental health issues, just physical struggling, who need somebody to motivate.
Yeah.
And yes, it was just one of those moments when I was like, do you know what? I used to run a business out here doing holidays. And in the end, after 10 years, it was one of those, do you know what? I haven't got the love for it anymore.
No.
I don't particularly want to do it anymore. And with changing economic situations, it's becoming a lot more difficult and will become a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And I had to assess whether or not mentally I could handle the stress that the next few years of running that said business
could bring you. Yeah.
And to be honest, no. I don't want to spend my 40s looking and feeling tired of stress. So when decided that enough was enough, it was, well, what am I going to do now? You can't do nothing. I'd like to do, don't get me wrong, I'd like to lady of leisure who could exercise at her own free will.
Yeah, yeah.
Shop for shoes, you know. other regular choice would just be, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
The shooting would be absolutely amazing. However, in the real world, I have to earn a living.
Yeah.
And it was, what are you going to do? And I love the gym. I love exercise. So I looked into options and I went, do you know what? Be a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And so I sort of signed up to the course in January and was like, right, and kept myself going through the winter. And I mean, doing the course was extremely, it was an intense course. And it was advertising in the 10th course. I never realized how intense this course was. You can do it. I mean, this is a course that people do over a year.
Right.
Or over 12 weeks. 12 weeks, it can be quite intense.
Oof, gosh. Yeah.
The 6-week route.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, physically, fitness-wise, I was completely ready for it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the classroom learning. I knew there was a lot of classroom. You have to know about anatomy. Circulation, your muscles, the bones. I mean, you obviously have to know how they work. You have to know where they connect, because you can't really turn around to someone and say, well, I want you to train your arms. And they say, why? And it's like, well, actually, it's going to be good for
this, this, this,
so you, but it was really intense. And it was quite stressful. But from exercise, I know how to control my stress a lot better. And the training was actually held in the gym.
Right.
So I would, as we discussed about driving earlier, when we were having a chat, we were talking about driving from Leeds to Manchester.
Yeah.
You mentioned in your last podcast about setting up that little bit earlier so you're not sat in traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I do is, set off at 6 o'clock. I'd be there by 7. Before the class, I would do an hour in the gym.
Oh, perfect, yeah.
Because what it would do, it would kind of prepare me for the day. It would, any stress or anxiety that I was feeling about that learning day alleviated instantly by just doing some exercise, simple cardio, simple cardio. And then I would sit there and be, and I felt a lot more prepared for the day. The days in which maybe I set off late from Leeds and didn't have the opportunity to sit in to go to the gym, maybe before, the learning was quite like, oh God, I've got to learn this and I've got to learn this. I've got to get this in. And I didn't actually feel as calm.
I used to love going to the gym before work, but my last contract was obviously commuting to Sheffield. I'd have to leave the house at 5:30. So I never got the opportunity to do that. Because you do feel really energized. It does. And it boosts your metabolism. Everything just kickstarts early on.
My favorite time to exercise is mornings. I prefer morning exercising to evening exercising by a long shot. Like you said, I think, as you just mentioned, those morning workouts, it just kickstarts you. And if you do wake up feeling a little bit down, maybe, that boost in the morning, because the endorphins it releases, the chemicals that it releases in your brain, and it also gets your body moving.
Yeah.
Blood pumping, your heart really beating. And I find that it can really focus you.
Yeah.
Because when you are exercising, what you do is, and I think, you can do it subconsciously, is that it does clear your mind, because you're concentrating on exercising and your body is concentrating on being coordinated. And so you might start your exercise day, you might start your routine in your head going through, right, today I've got to do this, today I've got to do that, or I forgot to send that payment off, I've got to pay this bill. In minutes, that has cleared. And then once you've exercised, you start with a clear, fresh mind. So everything you've been thinking about in the morning, suddenly, and then I find personally, I can then prioritise it.
Yeah.
And instead of one big muddle of, I need to do this, I need to do this, I need to do this. You can then suddenly go and go, right, well, actually, before I start work, I'm going to log on to my bank and pay this.
Do this, do it, yeah.
that email can be done during lunch break or whenever, and that even all those things that you were maybe stressing or anxious about first thing in the morning are still there, but exercise gives you the opportunity to clear it, reassess, and then you a little bit calmer.
It helps you to get the way I, the metaphor that I like to use when I'm talking to people with we're talking about serotonin particularly, but also other endorphins, is it helps you, your brain, to sort out the kind of internal filing cabinet that you have. Because when you wake up in the morning, it's all, well, I don't know about you, but it's all, mine's all over the place. So if I'm doing something else, in the meantime, my brain's kind of just ordering things out, exactly like you say. And then you feel more able to see things rationally and logically, I think.
That's it, spot on. And it's that thinking about things rationally. Because I know personally for me, my anxiety is that it's worse when I'm being irrational. And like you said, I like that filing cabinet. Because it is, it's like you're sitting at a desk and someone's just come and thrown a load of papers on your desk. And they're everywhere. And like you say, you can then, you go to your filing cabinet, and then exercise is like, exercise is basically your office junior.
Absolutely.
They still, I was an office junior. I loved up being an office junior. I'm not sure I enjoyed it, but I look back now and think, do you know what? That was, I love that job. It was so amazing.
Good fun job.
Yeah, I didn't really have responsibility apart from franking and filing. But yeah, filing it. And it becomes, instead of an irrational mess, you become rational. But not everybody has the opportunity to exercise in the morning. And so you have to find, and when you can't, you have to find a mechanism that in the morning gets you to that point where you feel quite relaxed. And I think sometimes, though, that's why maybe evening exercise can be quite, for me personally, can be quite a chore. Because the day builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where you actually, you feel fatigued, you feel tired. And it's tired from your mind. And it's tired from trying to rationalize everything and trying to get everything done. But that, like you say, though, getting then your foot through the door, which is a big hurdle to overcome.
It is. But like you say, if you can't work out in the morning, there is a benefit I sometimes find after work. It does blow the cobwebs away. You know, if you are, if you have had a muddled day, again, it does give you that opportunity at the end of the day. I tend to find that I don't have the energy to do as much as I would do in the morning, but I still use that opportunity to kind of divorce myself from what's gone on during the day and just concentrate on something completely different.
Like you say, I think also the benefit of maybe evening exercise as well, like you say, you can divorce yourself from the day, because if you've had a bit of a crappy day, or maybe you've had a disagreement with some with a work colleague, or something, you going back, you spoke about sleep last week. Sometimes what happens with me personally with sleep is, if I'm going to go to, if I go to bed and I'm taking to bed with me things that have happened through the day, they can, they run through your mind before you go to sleep. And so therefore, evening exercise is actually quite good if you've had a really crappy day, because like you say, you can then sort of divorce yourself from what's happened. It can help you rationalize what's happened. And then when you go to bed, you're not, your brain isn't going through everything that's happened through the day, because what you do is when you exercise, whether it be a 5K or gone and done a circuit class, or whether you've gone to the gym, for everybody, I genuinely believe that it does help, because you can separate, you can reevaluate the day, you then rationalize the day, and then you've cleared your mind before bed. And if anybody does suffer with sleep problems, and for me, sleep problems, mine, it's not necessarily insomnia. Mine is that my brain just stays awake because I tick over everything that's happened. So I know that if I can clear my head before sleep, I go to sleep.
Yeah.
But if I don't clear my head, days, because like I said, I do prefer morning exercise to evening, but at the moment with my work patterns, I've been doing a lot of evenings. Mm. But on the days when it's morning exercise, I have a book at the side of the bed.
Mm.
And before I fall asleep, anything that's actually there going through, I will just write it down.
Yeah.
And then to try and divorce myself from that. Yeah. But evening exercise actually is a good thing for doing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, so that's why then becoming a personal trainer, I was like, right, okay, I'd like to impart the knowledge that I have.
Fantastic.
To help other people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only newly qualified, so I don't claim to be a expert or anything like that.
But you bring to it a wealth of experience of some of the challenges and hurdles that would bring somebody to a personal trainer, and I think that's really important, because some personal trainers that I've seen do it because they love sport, but they don't necessarily have that personal reason for why sport is so important, as opposed to they just love it. Do you know what I mean?
For me, sport is a very, like you say, it's a very personal thing. It's from being so young, you know, up to now, and having those peak moments of doing lots and lots and lots of sport to the moments where I've done absolutely nothing. Mm. And the only exercise I got was dancing like a maniac in a club.
Yeah. Which has its own benefits, you know.
Which has its own benefits. I mean, I definitely got the heart rate pumping. Heart rate was definitely pumping.
Yeah.
But yes, it wasn't necessarily sport, as what people think.
No, it wasn't. No.
My take on mental health and sport.
Absolutely. Claire, thank you so much. What an absolutely fascinating chat. I had a kind of loose narrative in my head for how I wanted the chat to go, but I'm so glad that we followed this route, because we ended up where we needed to be, but I've learned so much.
Digressing into lots of areas.
Absolutely. Would you join us again? I'd love to have another chat with you about exercise and mental health another time.
Yes, I'd love to. I love the subject. Sorry, my battery's running low. The subject. I love being able to tell. Being able to talk about it, as you can tell.
Yeah.
And I also find it fascinating, because as our talk has actually shown, it digresses into lots of other subjects.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just about actually physical activity.
Yeah.
We've kind of gone off on lots of tangents.
We've covered everything. And I think what it's going to do, hopefully, is it's going to generate more discussion and more options and more opinions. So I'd love to revisit that with you another time. Claire, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll speak to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you ever so much.
Bye.
So that was Claire. As you can see, a conversation about exercise and mental health kind of went a little bit fractal, but that's wonderful. And that's exactly what I would hope for the Thinking Habits kind of podcast theme, really. I don't really want it to be too linear. I need it to be a discussion where people are comfortable talking, and where those conversations go is where they go, which is fantastic. There's loads to unpick there, and lots of resources which Claire has kindly shared the links to, which I'll put on the podcast post via Facebook and via Audio Boom and the usual places. But please do, as ever, if you've got any comments or questions or thoughts about what you've heard, podcast@thinkinghabits.co.uk is the email address. I'm on Instagram @thinkinghabits, Twitter the same, and Facebook is @thinkinghabitspodcast. I think I said Thinking Habits Pod last week, but it's Thinking Habits Podcast. So with that, I'll sign off, and as ever, keep talking, and if you need to talk, you know where we are. Bye.